Good morning. This is the Doris Davenport Show. My name is Doris Davenport. I am your host. Thank you for joining us this morning. We are going to be talking about the quality of our environment. It's a great way to put it. Whether it's raining outside, whether the sun is shining, doesn't matter if there's snow on the ground or you can see lush green all around you. It's the quality of all of that that matters to so many. There's a steady drumbeat going on in the city of Chicago, and that drumbeat is a drumbeat that says, we want more on the landscape of the environment, whether that means hiring new inspectors, increasing fines on the city's worst polluters, looking at the permitting and zoning laws that protect neighborhoods that have endured heavy pollution and designated and areas that have been designated as environmental justice communities for sustainable developments. The man that has been really keeping a keen eye on this and giving us reports, letting us know what is going on, is none other than Brett Chase, a researcher at the Better Government Association. He joins me now. Brett?
Welcome. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Welcome to the Doris Davenport Show. I so appreciate the work that you're doing and the recent article that you penned called Lightfoot's Actions on Environmental Campaign Promises Are Off to a Slow Start. I want to talk about that. You know, if I take a look at the website for the city of Chicago and I look at the plans that are there, and I think back to the campaign, Mayor Lightfoot spoke quite emphatically about the plans that she had to put a real spotlight and really, really beef up the environmental department, which we know was almost totally decimated under the previous administration. Tell me where we're coming from. So let's go back to the Emanuel administration. What were we looking at? What kind of hope did people have under the Emanuel administration as it relates to the environment?
Sure. Well, so yeah, some background. When Mayor Emanuel took office in 2011, he spent that year analyzing his budget, and he decided in a cost-cutting move to eliminate the Department of Environment and roll in their enforcement responsibilities into the Department of Public Health. And I heard, anecdotally that, the enforcement just wasn't, as robust as it had been before. And we decided to take a, deep dive into the data in late 2018, and we published our story in February of this year. And we found that, yes, actually the numbers showed us that there were huge declines in enforcement, in inspections, in staffing. And at the very end of the Emanuel administration, he actually started recognizing this and started asking for more inspectors. And let's fast forward to the campaign for mayor this year, when we had the two finalists, Tony Preckwinkle and Lori Lightfoot. Mm-hmm. And both candidates said, we're going to bring this department back. We're going to, we're going to make the environment an emphasis. And what I reported today is a slow start. And, the mayor told me that, she didn't know that there was a $838 million budget shortfall. And that's not nothing. We understand that. But there are folks in the communities that are just, saying, please, we need help. These are life and death matters for us. This is our quality of life. This is, we're getting sick. We're worried about our kids. There are all sorts of, environmental hazards, and we need help.
Yeah. And they rightfully should be feeling that. When Lori Lightfoot was running for mayor of the city of Chicago back in January of this year, she put out a 9-point environmental policy. And those people who voted for her, a lot of them, I think if we look at many of the recent demonstrations downtown in Chicago, which consisted of a lot of eligible voters that are very young in age, they're very, very focused on the environment right now. But some of the things that she promised was to implement and utilize information gathering processes for air and soil quality, She promised to create a brownfield initiative to identify, remediate, and redevelop lands that are underutilized because of potential contamination. She promised to reaffirm Chicago's commitment to reaching 100% renewable energy by 2025. She promised to improve Chicago's abysmal recycling rates by holding city waste contractors accountable. She promised to require Chicago's building code to be revisited every 5 years to ensure Chicago is utilizing the best available practices while not burdening development with obsolete requirements. And probably what's important to most people is she promised to expand lead water testing in homes and schools and public facilities to ensure that testing is truly representative. She promised to promote environmental justice through inclusive decision making, become a local and regional leader on environmental issues, and primarily the number one point is to bring back the city's Department of Environment. And what we know is that once she discovered that she's got this budget hole, which is real, it's real. You can't sneeze at it. It's real. But what she's promising now, even in spite of that, sounds more like a vision, as you put it, than a plan.
It is a vision, and she is she's committed to all those things that you just mentioned. But it's going to be up to this person that she hires, probably maybe in the coming weeks. This will be a very important position. It'll be really interesting to see how much power this individual is given. It's not a direct report. It reports to her policy advisor, and it's a big job. And initially, that person's not going to have a staff, but the mayor says that she's going to try to get some money for that. And we'll see. And you mentioned environmental justice. And I mean, environmental justice is a nice way of saying environmental racism. I mean, because the folks that bear the brunt of this stuff are, communities of color, low income neighborhoods. And I've been reporting on this for the last couple of years. These are areas where folks have just had, years and years of burden. And they're looking to this mayor who has, promised to change. And she's definitely focused on environmental justice, at least in terms of her, what she's, said out loud and what she's put in writing. So, that is a key difference between her and the last mayor. I mean, environmental justice is forefront. And, what I'm pointing out is that, a number of people out there in the neighborhoods are saying, let's get going. Let's see this and let's see some action. And let's see some enforcement action, which the mayor does address in the article that I just wrote.
Given what you know and you've done research on this issue, for the position, I believe it's been budgeted for $150,000. No staff yet. There's been no budget allocated for staff. How much can really be done? I mean, other than kind of just getting a lay of the land?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you're going to, have someone that's going to, just have this awesome responsibility, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and this isn't a brand new position either. I mean, what she's doing is giving this person a little bit of a pay raise. I think that the last full-time chief sustainability officers, which is actually what the position is called, under Rahm Emanuel, was paid maybe $139,000, $140,000. So it's a little bit bump in pay. And the mayor has talked about, we'll look at other, ways to fund this. And Emanuel did too. I mean, they would go out for like private funding, private grants, so there's possibilities that they could find some money. And then budgets can be, squishy. Maybe you find some money somewhere else, but that's going to be something to really watch. And I think just paying attention to who this individual is, who takes this job, is going to say a lot. And then watch what kind of power this person has, what kind of vision, how fast. You look at that list you just read. It's a lot of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And the mayor says that, right? She says, you know, this couldn't possibly be one person. We just have to, you know, figure out how to grow it, you know. But the department, recreating a whole new department would be an expensive proposition. You know, it would have been just to get something up and running, you know, tens of millions of dollars maybe, and she's trying to figure out, you know, how to close that huge gap. So, you know, I think we can all see that there is this financial stress and this position she's in.
Well, you know,
but
I mean, you're
one of the key things, mm-hmm. Yeah, that she campaigned on. So, we're keeping her honest. Yeah,
that's right. And I appreciate the work that the BGA is doing. I'm an avid follower of the BGA. I think you guys just do tremendous work, and I absolutely appreciate you all for doing it. Oh, yeah. And I'm a realist. So I'm not one who I'm a supporter of the mayor. I want her to succeed. And at the same time, I have to do my job, which is to tell the truth and to make sure that I'm being as transparent as possible. And I'm not going to allow my desire for success to cloud, putting the truth out there. And the truth is that if we look at places like McKinley Park, who's been dealing with an asphalt plant that's got fumes spraying all over the neighborhood, I have talked to residents in Asphalt Park that are so afraid of in McKinley Park, they're so concerned about their property values taking a dive because of all of the pollution in the air. I remember Operation Silver Shovel on the west side of Chicago, where there were waste sites, 3 football fields long and wide. In fact, I led a protest of about 20 18-wheeler tractor-trailer trucks, where we tied up traffic on the Dan Ryan and surrounded that site because we wanted it cleaned up. The senior citizens were totally suffering with asthma from all of the dust coming off of those piles of waste. These are communities that have been suffering for a long time. And I know that for them, this is not enough. It's just not enough to say, I'm going to put one person in a position. And I really think that as we move forward, it's not so much even looking at what this person is going to do, as much as I think there should be a razor-focused eye on who she reports to, which is Dan Lurie, because Dan Lurie comes out of the Obama administration. He's the chief policy director for Lori Lightfoot. He's a guy who knows what it's like to start something from the ground up. He led a national arts program for the Obama administration. He launched the Sustainable Communities, Sustainable Housing program under that administration. So he knows what it's like to have barriers put in place that impede your ability to succeed. It is going to be up to him, I think, to give her the kind of, steam that she needs to really plow ahead to get something done, whomever this person is.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but that is who the chief sustainability officer is going to report to, is Dan Lurie.
Uh-huh. Yes. So we're going to be, I think the focus should not just be on the new chief sustainability officer, but on him as well, because she's only going to be able to do as much as he will allow her to do.
Right. And of course, the buck stops with Lori Lightfoot.
Of course.
So, I mean, we're going to, look to the mayor to put this into motion, to really, to show us some action here in the next, coming months, really.
That's right. That's right. Brett, tell me, please, what are some of the most impacted communities in Chicago that are dealing with environmental justice issues?
Southeast Side, where she made this announcement about the Office of Environment. I mean, these are the residents that have to deal with pet coke, manganese dust, all sorts of industry. This used to be a thriving middle class area where, when the steel mills were up and running, but they're long gone. It's remained a heavy industry sort of area. General Iron, controversial, scrap metal recycler on the or metal shredder, I should say. It doesn't really recycle, but you know, it's like it's on the Lincoln Park being moved out for the new Lincoln Yards development, and guess where it's going? Southeast Side. So that is one of the worst, the most impacted areas of the city. Then you look at Little Village, you know, which I've spent a lot of time there. Lots of right in the industrial corridor, high school right across from some very dirty businesses. You know, the folks there have fought for years to close down a coal plant, actually two coal plants, because we had the other one in Pilsen, another area that's, heavily impacted, the whole South Side, the whole West Side. In fact, if you go to bettergov.org, you start searching stories under my name, you can see a piece that we did last year with help from the Natural Resources Defense Council.
Is that the interactive map?
Yeah, that map, which continues to just, we get tons of clicks on this every single week.
And let me just say it.
A lot of people are looking at it.
Yeah, let me put a pin in it because I think it's fascinating, folks. It is the interactive map. If you put in Google BGA interactive map, pollution hits Chicago's west, south sides hardest. It really is a fascinating, fascinating piece.
It is really eye-opening. It's a heat map that you can see the worst, most impacted areas. And guess what? There is communities of color, lower income areas. You're not seeing the same sort of thing in some other parts of the city, even though the entire metro area is, we're not anywhere near, meeting the Clean Air Act, for certain, types of pollution. It's a dirty city, and these are some of the most polluted communities in the, in the metro area.
Brett, I've heard a lot of descriptions about Chicago. This is the first time I've ever heard Chicago described as a dirty city, but you're right.
It's very polluted.
It is very polluted, and you're right. It's concentrated in the areas of people where people have the lowest, the fewest amount of resources to help themselves.
Right, and there's kids that are, they're suffering from asthma and other illnesses. They're missing school. How are we going to, help folks? One way we could, make sure that they have, that their civil rights aren't being violated, by not having access to clean water and clean air. So
yeah, that's right.
That's what environmental justice is all about.
Yeah, you're right. It's your study is phenomenal. It really does show the greatest exposure to air, water, and land pollution, where it falls, and it's primarily on neighborhoods that have the largest concentration of African American and Latino residents. As we wrap up, why don't you tell our listeners what you would like to see? What will make BGA feel that Lori Lightfoot is really doing all, capital A, capital L, capital L, that she can do a year from now?
Well, I think just keeping our campaign promises. And we don't have to get bogged down on whether it's a Department of Environment or an Office of Environment or, call it whatever you want. I mean, when I talk to the people in the neighborhoods, they don't care. They just want something done. They want enforcement. They want to make sure that polluters are policed and they're not allowed to, continue to hurt the children in these neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And, one thing that's important too, because this is part of my coverage, is like what we're seeing at the state and federal level is a decline in enforcement there too. I just did a piece on the EPA under Trump, and you can find that at bettergov.org as well. But, if there's, and there was a whole bunch of data in there in terms of lower inspection numbers, which, could eventually show up as lower enforcement, actions. And the US EPA has been the one that's been there rock solid for, decades. When the city and the state can't handle, big pollution cases, they go to the feds. And, right now, it's looking a little bleak. There's another report recently about state government, how the Illinois EPA has been decimated as well over the years because of budget constraints.
We're talking with Brett Chase with the Better Government Association. Brett, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Let's not make this the last time.
All right. Sounds good.
Talk with you soon. Thank you so much. This is the Doris Davenport Show. Thank you so much for joining us on this conversation about environmental justice and the vision and plans for the Department of Environmental Affairs for the City of Chicago under the current administration with Mayor Lori Lightfoot. My name is Doris Davenport. I am your host. And welcome to the Doris Davenport Show. My name is Doris Davenport. I am your host. I'm so excited. It is Saturday morning. It is bright and early. It's about, what, 6:30, maybe a little bit after. You know what? It's a beautiful day. We know we have had some really unusually warm weather, and it's going to stay like this at least till Tuesday. But you know what? I am really loving it because, yeah, that was me taking a real deep breath. And I am smelling something that is absolutely delicious. So delicious, I even sometimes want to just stick my finger in it and taste it. I am smelling something called lavender and rosemary whipped shea butter. It has become a part of my every morning routine. I know, you know, they say don't let people into your personal life too much when you're on the radio. Well, I'm letting y'all all the way in because you know what? Every single morning, my hands are lathered in either lavender and rosemary or cucumber whipped shea butter, and I am spreading it all over my body. That's right. I said it. I'm telling you all what one of my rituals are. And it's, let me tell you, my skin feels so good. I smell so good. Yeah, I do. In fact, I was with somebody the other day, and I put this shea butter on his hands. His girlfriend picked him up and she said, "My goodness, you smell so good. What is that?" He looked at her and said, "Shea butter." That's right. And these were Caucasians, y'all, so it's not just black folk and brown folk that need shea butter. If you want really, really great feeling and smelling skin, then you need some shea butter. I'm so excited to introduce to you a husband and wife team, Mary and Daryl. They're going to talk with us about their company. Their company is Hello to Natural. Mary and Daryl, are you there?
Yes, we're here.
Hey, we're here.
How are you?
Oh, we're great. Thank you so much for that intro. That was wonderful.
I know. I'm telling all my secrets, but I can't help it. I'm just so hooked. I feel like it's a new drug that I just can't seem to, you know, peel myself away from. So listen, I want to know, you all have this business called Hello to Natural, and it is a line of skincare products. Is that right?
Yes.
And this Hello to Natural skincare line has a number of different products in your inventory. I mean, you've got everything from butters and oils and soaps and perfumes. And these are homemade scents that you're doing. What I want to know first, how did you get involved in this? I mean, do you have science backgrounds?
So we started, when we first started, in 2017, I had this idea to kind of just start a business, basically going off of a couple blog articles that I had read. The blog articles seemed really straightforward, and I was between jobs. And so in the process of deciding to try to start this business, I decided to, you know, look for a product. And Mary happened to be using shea butter for her hair at the time. And I asked about it, and she was, you know, she introduced me to it, and I was like, wow, this is really nice. And so I started, you know, and then she told me about whipped shea butter, which is just taking raw shea butter and mixing it with scented body oils and carrier oils like that. And so I basically just started looking up on YouTube videos on how to make whipped shea butter. Looked up a couple, like I would say probably like 4 or 5 different videos, and then based on that and based on other recipes that I found online, I just decided to start experimenting. And so like the first recipe that we used, you know, it came out like grainy, which shea butter can sometimes be. And so we got some feedback and we decided to retool the recipe. I looked up, did some research on how to, you know, get rid of the graininess. And we sort of just iterated like that. And eventually we came up with, you know, a product that our relatives liked. And then, you know, we first started selling it to, so my wife used to work at Jensen Elementary School. I hope that's okay to say it, but basically we started selling shea butter to the teachers at Jensen Elementary School. And that was like, you know, the first sort of outward selling for us. And that was our first feedback that people outside of our family, you know, liked what we had come up with. And it was the cucumber shea butter that was like, cucumber and lavender, the first two scents that people really liked. And so, those two scents are pretty special for us.
Which ones were those?
Lavender and cucumber breeze.
Oh, my two favorites. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. In fact, I just gave a little bit to my producer here, and I'm telling him, you know, it's oily when you first put it on, but literally you can look at it and within seconds, it's just like your skin just drinks it up and it's just so smooth. It's like the oil just evaporates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a nice characteristic about shea butter. It'll, you know, melt into the skin, and then the oils that we use, we sort of formulate it so that it's not, we try to be intentional that it's not super oily on the skin. That's something that we've been working on.
The other thing that I noticed that you guys have really mastered is I've used shea butter over the years for a long time. And the problem that I've always had with shea butter is that typically it's really gritty. But your shea butter is whipped shea butter, but there is no grit. How do you do that? How do you get that consistency where there is no grit at all?
So initially, as Daryl was saying, we kind of just used our family as kind of like our testing market, and they gave us a lot of feedback, and we did some research, and Daryl did some research and found that it was kind of two parts to it. So we cook down the shea that we get, and we strain it and comb it for impurities, and then we add in carrier oils. But the really important thing that Daryl emphasizes that we have to cool it really quickly, like we have to put it in the refrigerator or freezer so it can recongeal really quickly, and that keeps the particles from separating. Then with it solidifying at the same time at the lower temperature, when we get ready to whip it and add oils into it, it generates a really smooth and creamy texture.
Is this the kind of Another point to this is if you've ever had shea butter and you left it in the car in the summer, you'll notice that it melts. And then if someone knows or someone tells you, if you put that shea butter in the refrigerator, it'll congeal back up and you can use it again. But if you leave that shea butter, you know, if you just bring it in the house and it'll just like kind of slowly cool down, That's where it'll get that grittiness and the graininess. And that's because, once again, it's had a slow process. It's had a slow cool down where the different particles would solidify at different times. So as long as you refrigerate shea butter after it's been melted, it should congeal.
Now, do you guys make these products yourself, or do you have a team of people making the products?
No, it's just Daryl and I. We literally do every aspect of this job, of this business. And people are often amazed, but we make all the products. I mean, there are a few that we resell, but like the soap pouches and the loofahs, we buy in bulk and just resell those. But the liquid black soap, the facial wash, the body wash, the bangle butter, the shea butter, the hair oil, we make all of that by hand. And
wow.
We jar everything, we label everything, we do all the fulfillment, we do all the marketing and advertising, we handle all the customer related issues or concerns. We literally do everything, just the two of us. So
that is amazing.
And we don't sleep very much either.
And you and both of you manage to keep a smile on your face every time I see you.
Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty in what we do. It doesn't feel like work. I mean, we know it's work and we know it's a lot of hard work, but it's not as laboring. It's not mentally taxing or laboring as like some of the traditional jobs we've had before, because it's something we're building. It feels almost like a child in a sense. We don't have children naturally yet. Mm-hmm. And so this business feels like a child that we're raising.
Wow. That's amazing. And the company is called Hello to Natural. The website is hellotonatural.com. And that is Hello T-O Natural, Hello to Natural. It's amazing that you do everything yourself. When I look at the products and I tell you, my sisters are going to love me when they get their Christmas presents, because all of my sisters will be wearing Hello to Natural this Christmas on their bodies.
Awesome.
And really, it's exciting. Do you have a separate place from your home where you're making these products? Do you have a place with a lab? I mean, you're making these scents, so I've seen those perfume kits that you can buy. But you, how many scents do you have in your perfumes?
We have about 80 different.
I'm sorry, what did you just say?
We have 80. We have about
80
different scented. 80, yes.
Oh my goodness!
Yes. We have about 80 different fragrance types in our scented body oil collection, and I would say about 20-30% we make from essential oils and carrier oils, and the other we buy in like mass quantities and we rebatch into smaller little bottles. And these are from companies that we've sourced that have like quality products. We know what's in. We know the ingredients in them. And they're just likened after some of the traditional fragrances you would find in a Macy's or in a Bloomingdale's or stores like that. And in terms of our operation, we've actually converted a good percentage of our home into a lab. We have a fulfillment area. We have a lab area. And so we had to kind of get creative in trying to convert our space into a working lab because we are both doing this full time. And so we don't have other jobs.
I looked up and I used to listen to podcasts a lot in my working days, and I listened to like Damon John's story. And Damon John, in his early days, he had the story about how he and his family, he decided to, he and his family decided to basically turn their home into a FUBU Ground Central. And we're slowly but surely turning our home into Hello to Natural Ground Central. So, you know, we've turned different areas of the house into dedicated spaces for our business operations.
Well, now that's funny. You mentioned Damon John. Have you ever thought about putting a presentation together and going before Shark Tank?
It's so funny. That's like one of the looming things that we go back and forth with. We love the show. We love the sharks. And it's something that I won't say it's off the table of consideration, but I think that we've honestly just kind of taken this guerrilla marketing viral kind of thing, with just organically growing and just kind of slow and steady wins the race kind of attitude.
Yeah.
Maybe down the line it's something we would consider, but right now, because it's just the two of us, if we went on a show like that, even if we didn't land a deal, if we got an influx of like 50 or 60 or 70,000 orders, we probably really wouldn't know what to do, honestly.
Honestly, just from watching the show, we know that the sharks would tell us that we should just stick with what we're doing for now, and we just need to keep on grinding. So we, that's how much we watch the show. So, like, I already know what they tell us. Mm-hmm. But like we said, we, you know, it would be great if we get to the point where it makes sense.
Right.
We wouldn't rule it out. Right.
We have aspirations of finding like a separate space and hiring one or two employees, and like those are like our goals for 2020 because we've been slowly growing and we're at a point where our business is pretty much dictating that we will need a space, we will need employees, and we just are essentially just trying, just like with everything we've done, we're just trying to make sure we have everything in place. All our I's are dotted and all of our T's are crossed. But that's just going to be the natural progression as we take Hello to Natural to the next level. It's just kind of finding our dedicated space and employees and things like that.
That's great. And keep an eye on the land bank because they have a commercial aspect of the land bank too. The Chicago, it's Cook County Land Bank where they have properties for,
right.
You're familiar with it?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, you might be able to find something, and you just never know. But you guys are some
right.
really smart people. I mean, you all didn't just get up in the morning one day and decide you're going to start this business. I want to hear about your backgrounds. Now, Daryl, I know you've got an engineering background, and Mary, you come from corporate. You've got a branding, marketing. Tell us where you all got your professional start.
So I'll go first. So my professional spectrum. It's pretty interesting. So I started out like right out of college, essentially working for Allstate, which is one of like the top insurance companies in the country. And that's pretty much where the foundation for my selling began. I was like one of the top 100 salespeople in the organization. And from there, I went on to be a general manager at a Lens Crafters. I helped Groupon launch some of its initial markets. I was one of the first 500 employees of Groupon when it started in the early 2010s. From there, I had a personal assistant business. And then most recently, I took a small little dip back into the workforce before coming on full-time at Hello to Natural at Yelp. And so if you make it, I can sell it. And the good news is I make it now, so I can sell it. But I've managed, I've sold, I've consulted. In the corporate selling marketing industry with startups. And one thing I can say across every industry I've learned is that it's really important to listen. It's really important to provide or meet a need. And it's just important to have a quality product because if you do, it really will sell itself. And also just being kind and being a good person. And those are some of the tenets, I think, that have kind of molded my professional prowess in the landscape of selling and marketing and things like that.
Wonderful.
I'll jump in here. So my background is, Yeah, so I graduated with a computer science degree from Vanderbilt from college. And I've basically been working in like the IT in software engineering field for like the last 15 years. I've worked for a number of companies. I think so like my first real programming company was Bradley Consulting. I was working for the Chicago Police Pension Fund, sort of building out their pension calculation engine that's, I believe, still in use. And then I went to Deloitte, and I was doing consulting for about a year. We moved to Kansas to work. I was working at Cerner. Then I came back. We moved back to Chicago. I worked at Civis Analytics. It's a data analytics company here in Chicago. They came from the Obama 2012 Obama analytics campaign. That was the company that spun out of there. And so I learned a lot about programming and analytics from there. I met a lot of really good people there. And then I worked at a couple other companies, but it was really after I left Civis that I wanted to make this try at another business, which ended up being Hello to Natural. But in the process of building out Hello to Natural, everything has been learned from just trial and error, and from Googling and from watching YouTube videos, and so like even learning marketing was just a lot of Googling, a lot of watching videos, and a lot of trial and error, you know, a lot of, I would say money, I wouldn't say down the drain, but it was money that was spent to learn lessons, to learn how to use, you know, the different platforms and things like that. So, my background is it definitely has helped, you know, with managing the back end of the website and the design and stuff. And then, you know, building out as we've worked to build out our social media following stuff like that. It helps to, you know, look at the analytics and be able to see who our customers are and, you know, be able to, you know, have a better idea of who we're talking to, you know, because, you know, it helps to know who you're talking to when you're talking to them. So.
Oh, yeah. And you all have a really good handle on the social media aspect of things.
Yeah, that's something that we've, you know, building in business has we've learned on the ground, on our feet.
Yeah.
You know, we did it because the analytics showed that, you know, people are using their phones right now and people are on Instagram and Facebook. And so we essentially just followed the numbers.
Right. Yeah, and I think we learned that the more you post, the more engagement that you will have. And I think something that Daryl kind of like stumbled upon, because like you said, a lot of this has been trial and error for us, but we found a lot of success in the quality of the pictures and the quality of the content. And for us, we have a company that has products, but I think we're also trying to establish a brand. And so our brand is like just being more centric or focused around healthy eating and healthy living and just healthy practices. Mm-hmm. And so we are able to kind of share information in a broader spectrum than just the stuff we sell. We also want to inform people on healthy alternatives to just general lifestyle choices. And because we've opened it up where we're not just solely focused on selling things, but also educating the public, I think a lot of people have gravitated toward that and find some level of solace in that, you know, it's not just about us making money, but it's also about us, you know, creating a community for people who are interested in just healthy products or healthy living.
Yeah, and you have a blog area to your website, and I think that's one of your education platforms that you utilize. And it's really nice because, I mean, you do talk about things like, you know, what does commodogenic mean? And why are products that are commodogenic good for your skin? How to get rid of stretch marks you talk about, how to get rid of eczema. And I love that you are talking to men as well as women. Typically, when we think of beauty products or skincare, we mostly think of women. But your products, even in your fragrances, you've got fragrances that are designed for men, fragrances that are designed for women. And I like the fact that you're utilizing that educational piece to component to educate men and women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, honestly, that was like before we even got into really social media. Like, I managed a blog or a couple blogs, like sort of on our path to this venture. I managed, you know, a couple blogs, and so blogging was sort of like a natural way, you know, once we first got the site up to write about stuff, you know, do some research about, you know, our own products and put together, you know, not necessarily put content about our products in the blog, but we talk about, you know, the conditions that are related to the products that we use, and, you know, doing research and then putting together that content was sort of our first way of doing outreach. We would write articles and post on Facebook and, you know, that, you know, Facebook and Twitter and email. And that's sort of like our first sort of way to outreach about us and about, you know, educating people about our products.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I can say that I not a day goes by that I'm not utilizing the Hello to Natural products, and I am absolutely happy with them. Not only do I use them on my skin, I put them in my hair, and my hair is just loving it. Let me tell you, my scalp loves it, my hair loves it, and because I'm a natural girl, I tell you, my hair just loves it so much.
Yeah, I actually use it in my hair as well. I use it along the edges. I use it for edge control. I use it in my scalp to moisturize sometimes. And we even have a few beauticians who use our shea butter as like a finishing sheen for some of their clients. So we do have a few beauticians who use our products for those similar reasons. And, you know, shea is heavy. But luckily, if you just use a small amount,
that's right,
it goes such a long way, even in the hair, and it's nourishing for the hair and scalp.
It
so
does. Well,
I'm
we
glad
have.
You found that.
I have. We have run out of time. Give me two celebrity endorsements that you have.
So we have a celebrity endorsement from Kim Coles and from Sinbad.
Woo! I love it. I love it. And their skin looks good. Ah, Mary and Daryl, I wish we had more time, but it's Christmas time. Tell everybody where they can go and order Hello to Natural products.
For right now, we're still online. The best way to order is to place your order before, I would say, December 18th, just if you want to get it by Christmas. But, come on to www.hellotonatural.com.
And follow us on social media at Hello to Natural on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and Pinterest.
All right. Thank you so much, Mary and Daryl. Love you guys.
Love you so much. Thank you, Doris.
You are welcome. This is the Doris Davenport Show. I'm your host, Doris Davenport. Enjoy your Saturday and the rest of the weekend. I'll see you next week. It's time for the weekend roundup. Yesterday, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, asked the chair of the Judiciary Committee to draft articles of impeachment against the President of the United States. Impeachment hearings will resume next week. There will be much to discuss. Is it a case of three-card Monty? According to Crane's Chicago Business, state regulators approved a $17 million cut in ComEd's delivery rate for next year, but only after greenlighting a $50 million rate hike less than 2 weeks before. The commission yesterday approved a $17 million reduction in ComEd's delivery rates, as requested by the utility. In a release, ComEd delivered the good news, saying the average residential customer would see their monthly electric bill decline by 60 cents next year. But the release didn't tell the whole story. ComEd's net rates actually will climb by $33 million next year, thanks to a move late last month to boost ComEd's customer charge by $50 million for the energy efficiency programs it administers. That November 26 ICC ruling wasn't the subject of any ComEd press release. ComEd, as you know, is a subsidiary of Exelon. On another Exelon note, Exelon CEO Anne Premaggiore stepped down amid a federal probe in ComEd's lobbying activity. The top seat will be filled by Calvin G. Butler, Jr., who will oversee all six of the utilities owned by BGE's Chicago-based parent, Exelon Corp. Calvin Butler, a one-time ComEd lobbyist, leaves his position as CEO of Baltimore Gas and Electric Company, but will remain on the East Coast where he is based. As customers see a rate cut, preceded by a rate hike, we should be comforted by the fact that the new male CEO will make $75,000 less than his female predecessor, whose salary was $775,000. Let's turn to the 2020 presidential primary. Michael Bloomberg, a former mayor of New York, entered the 2020 presidential race with a sweeping gun control plan that includes a national gun licensing system and stricter background checks. Vice President Joe Biden challenged a voter to push-ups when the voter called into question the vice president's son's business dealings in Ukraine. When the voter began making false claims against his son, Hunter Biden, Joe Biden transformed from vice presidential candidate Biden to Joe, Hunter's dad. Joe called the voter a damn liar and challenged him to a set of push-ups, since I guess he was acting like he was all that. It should be noted that the voter refused to give his name to reporters. Who wouldn't want to see Joe Biden and Donald Trump on the same debate stage? Or not? Perhaps you think Michael Bloomberg jumping in is a good fallback? How low can he go? R. Kelly, The AP reports, a revised indictment in federal court in Brooklyn accuses R. Kelly of scheming with others to pay the Illinois official for a fraudulent identification document for someone identified only as Jane Doe. A day later, R. Kelly, then 27, married 15-year-old R&B singer Aaliyah D. Houghton in a secret ceremony arranged by Kelly at a hotel in Chicago. The marriage was annulled months later because of Houghton's age. Defense attorney Douglas Anton on Thursday called the latest charge against his client ridiculous and absurd. The Brooklyn prosecutors had already charged R. Kelly with racketeering, kidnapping, forced labor, and sexual exploitation. They alleged he and his employees and assistants picked out women and girls at concerts and groomed them for sexual abuse. The 52-year-old singer, who is being held without bond, is scheduled to stand trial in federal court in Chicago in April on child pornography and obstruction of justice charges before facing trial in Brooklyn. New rules. A new rule from the Trump administration removes able-bodied adults without dependents from the food stamp program. Up to 140,000 residents of Illinois could lose their Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, benefits. According to multiple reports, Patch's Jeff Dempsey writes, the change comes after President Donald Trump's administration announced the new rule. The change comes after President Donald Trump's administration announced a new rule that would remove able-bodied adults without dependents from the program. USDA Chief Sonny Perdue, appointed by Trump, said the move is intended to get people back to work and not to kick them off the program. My thanks to Shia Kapos. And that does it for this week's Weekend Roundup. Please be sure to tune in this afternoon to the Dick Kay Show from 1 to 4 p.m. Doris Davenport, that's me. I'll be filling in for Dick Kay as a guest host. I'll be looking for you. That's this afternoon, right here on WCPT 820, 1 through 4. Join me. I want to hear from you.